Introduce our main speaker for this evening, Don M. from Laguna Hills.
Good evening. My name's Don. I'm an alcoholic.
Don.
Who's grateful to be alive, sober, and free on a Saturday night?
Yeah. Yeah.
You want to be alive, you got to be awake. I want to congratulate the chip taker, I believe it's Cindy, for 90 days. Missy for 90 days. And to our birthday celebrant, Kyle, congratulations on 2 years. Keep coming back, and you make sure you put your hand out to the guy behind you and show him how it's done and how we stay sober one day at a time. I want to thank Laura for asking me to come out and the Southern California Speakers meeting to ask me to come out, or us to come out, and thanks my husband for coming out and to do the 10-minute. It's always an honor and a privilege. And you were so diligent in getting the text messages and the calls, and I really appreciate that. And she is does her job diligently, so thank you so much. I want to welcome the newcomers. But I also want to welcome anyone who's coming back. Is anyone coming back to Alcoholics Anonymous? Thank you for your honesty. Those that are coming back, did you walk away and say that AA didn't work? How many of you? No honesty. Thank you for your honesty. Well, our book says it works if you have the proper attitude and work at it. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. So if you're coming back to Alcoholics Anonymous and you're out there trying to control and enjoy your drinking, welcome home. And if your self-knowledge and willpower have failed you again, welcome home. And if you're running around in those bedevilments sober, welcome home. And if you're out there drinking against your will and you are desperate and you are tired, welcome home. And welcome to a way of life that works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. You see, I came here powerless, and that means without power. Lack of power is our dilemma. We had to find a power in which to live. There's no human power that could relieve us of our alcoholism. But there is one who has all power, and that one is God. May you find him now. It's urgent. So all we ask around here is you grab someone whose hand who has a working knowledge of this big book, has had a spiritual experience or a spiritual awakening, tap into the power that, you know, is in the group or in your sponsor that runs innocent through us and connects us all. You see, this is information. This is on just how to gain access to that power. It's up to us to put it into application, to bring about that transformation, and then be a demonstration. There is a power that is accessible, and we can never be separated from it. We aren't being dramatic when we say it's fatal. People are dying out there. We know what works here, and the instructions are here. I have a sobriety date. My sobriety date is April 16th, 1994. I have a sponsor and I have a home group. And that home group is the women's meeting at the Canyon Club in Laguna Beach at 6 p.m. on a Thursday night. So ladies, if you're ever in the area, please stop on by. We don't have a meeting name, so you'll just have to trust me that it's on Thursday night at 6 p.m. at the Canyon Club in Laguna Beach. You see, we didn't think that the Orange County Central Office would print it. That's because we call ourselves the sluts. And that's an acronym for sober ladies using the steps. And I will steal my friend Mary's line. She says, I came in as a slut and I became a slut. And I'm like, me too. So ladies, if you're ever in the area, you can become a slut too. I truly believe that every sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous is a demonstration of God's power to change a human being. But how do we change? We'll use the essentials of recovery that's found in the spiritual experience of this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the H-O-W of this program. That's how. The honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. But I believe that willingness is the key that it talks about in the third step of the 12 and 12. Because if I'm not willing to be honest, I'm not going to be honest. And if I'm not willing to be open-minded, I'm not going to be open-minded. And if I'm not willing to be willing, nothing is going to change for me. And nothing did change for me in my first year of sobriety. But let me tell you how I got into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But before I do that, I want to tell you a few things about me. When I was 12 years old, I had this epiphany on my parents' front porch. I knew deep within three things about my life. When I worked with a sponsor later on, she would tell me that that deep in your gut feeling, that is your intuition. And ultimately, your intuition is connection to a God. But I don't know that yet. I'm 12. I know that I'm not going to have any kids. I know that my 30s are going to be great. And I know that I'm going to travel the world in a business suit, carry a briefcase. Much like Bill, I was going to be the head of a vast empire. I was going to manage with the utmost assurance. And I was going to prove to the world I was important. And I knew these three things at 12. And I went, oh. And I went on my merry way. But I also believe that we are all born with this divine spark within us. And it's whether we fuel it or we smother it. And each and every time I take a drink, I dim the light of the spirit within. Fuel it or smother it. And try as I might, I didn't distinguish the light. Because in the darkest of dark, there's always a pinpoint of light. And there is a power that is accessible, and we can never be separated from it. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind, not in his body. So let me tell you what I was thinking about between the ages of 12 and 15 when I took my first drink. So I'm a Whittier girl. And when I was coming up on the high school campus, we had all those social groups, you know, like the Socias, the Stoners, the Rah-Rah Girls, the drill team, the band, and all those extracurricular activities. And I never felt like I fit in. It's a common theme around here. I never felt like I fit in. I felt apart from. Our 12 and 12 talks about that. It talks about anxious apartness. And I felt apart from. I never felt pretty enough to be in your social group. I wasn't musically talented enough to be in the band. I wasn't coordinated enough to be in the drill team. And I just wasn't enough. And I have no idea where that measuring stick came from. But I just wasn't enough. I was an equestrian. I rode and showed horses on the weekend. I did very, very well. I won national titles. But there is not an equestrian group in the high school campus that I came from. So I did all that. When I was 15 years old, I could tell you exactly where I was and who I was with and what I drank. I was at the El Monte auction. I was with a group of older friends, and I drank Southern Comfort right out of a bag. Right? Let me tell you what Southern Comfort did. Southern Comfort comforted. It hit the pit of my stomach. It was like, yes! And I felt like I could exhale for the very first time. What I felt like it did is I usually felt like I was running at a level of less than. And I added alcohol to this alcoholic body. And I came up to the playing field. And I was fun. It was fun, and I was, you know, I was flirtatious. It was life of the party. I loved the effect produced by alcohol that night. And I would continue to seek that which it did for me that very first night for the rest of my drinking career. Oh, yes. I loved the effect produced by alcohol. I loved it so much, the very first lie I told was to the California DMV. I told them I took my girlfriend's baptism certificate. I told them I was new to town and I needed an ID to cash checks. So I went up there, made my way up to the counter, and I said, you know, I signed her name and her birth date, let them take my picture, mailed it to my address. And I'm thinking, it's half legit. So then I start lying to my parents and telling them I'm going to the, you know, basketball games, football games, dances. Now, all of you guys know I never went. And they would, and you would find me at the Mississippi Moonshine Club at Downey. And I am not there to party, have fun, or pick up. I am there to drink, you know, to seek the relief that alcohol provided. It says we are restless, irritable, and discontent unless we can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Stick me in the corner, prop me up, give me a drink, I'm good. And I love the effect produced by alcohol. You know, and so I'm going through high school, and, you know, I had early warning signs, blackouts early on. And then I'm, you know, borrowing the, you know, my parents' car, and there were some unexplained dents, you know, like the shopping cart hit it at the grocery store, and hitting guardrails and all that stuff. You know, there was a time that I had started drinking in El Monte on a Saturday night, and I came to in my bed on a Sunday morning, and I had no idea how that had happened. And I got up and I read the paper, and there was a blurb in the paper, and it said that there was a fatal hit and run in El Monte. And I ran out to check my car to see if there was any evidence of blood, hair, or a dent, or anything that it might have committed, you know, that I had evidence that I had committed this crime. And it was not me. Whew. Next. You know, there was other times where, you know, I had 1 foot in the window and 1 foot out of the window, and Dad said, "Are you coming or going?" Well, at 17 years old, at 3 a.m., there's really no right answer. So I'd get on restrictions, you know, they'd take the family car, you know, no allowance and all this stuff. But I get through high school pretty much unscathed. There is one thing, is that I was voted the senior class clown. When I do an inventory later on, I would understand that that was a level of self-centeredness. And I was also the valedictorian. You see, I'm very good academically, but socially I'm really inept. But I was the third valedictorian of my high school graduating class, and I did really well. And during the high school years, I never had a date. I never had a boyfriend. I never even went to the prom. Oh. Come on. Thank you. That's my justification. So I get out of high school at 20 years old. I met a guy in January, married him in August. If you're thinking about doing that now, I hope you have a sponsor. I did not have a sponsor at that time. And later on, when I would do an inventory, I would realize I married the first man that ever paid attention to me. Now, when I get married, I don't have any, the only example I have is my parents. Now, they're still married to this day, 54 years later, and I'm trying to mimic my parents. I have no experience being in a relationship. I have opinions about them, but I have no experience. I also get my first corporate job. So I'm trying to be this doting housewife, and I'm trying to be this, you know, this doting wife, or the doting housewife, and the, you know, this this career woman, right? And I don't know how to do either, but I'm doing the best I can. Now, mind you, I have had this ID for about 6 years, five, 6 years, and I have been burnt out of the bars, and so I'm married now, and so I taper off on the drinking. And so I'm going to work every day, and I'm doing, oh, by the way, I'm doing meal preps long before they were famous. I'm prepping lunches, and I'm making dinners for four days in the future, and I'm doing all that stuff. I'm going to the grocery store on a Saturday morning at 6 a.m., and I'm doing the grocery shop and loading up the cart. I get home, I unload the cart, and then I grab all the laundry, and I go to the laundromat, and I wait all the, you know, for all the dryers to dry, and I fold all that stuff up, and I come home, and I unload the car, and he's still doing his dry goods on the couch. And I'm just doing the best I can. And I'm trying to manage the show, run our life. And at 5 months into that marriage, that man came home with hickeys on his neck and chest and told me there were bruises from work. And out popped the measuring stick. And I'm not enough. I'm not pretty enough to be your wife. I'm not good enough to be your wife. I'm not talented enough to be your wife. You're seeking outside relations. And I don't know what to do. And I have no idea where I attach shame to divorce. I did not want to be the first divorce in the family, so I stayed. And for 7 more months, every time that man walked out that front door, I became an ugly piece of work. And I start verbally assaulting him, physically assaulting him. He might have just been going to Pep Boys. 7-Eleven. His brother's house. Didn't matter. I was not a vision for you. So eventually the police are escorting me out of my own home. Don't you know what he did to me? Don't you know what he did to me, to me, to me? Self-pity and victim oozing out of my pores. 7 months, week after week after week. And on 1 year anniversary, I did not know what to get him for a gift, so I asked for a divorce. He obliged. He's like, "I'm out." So we parted ways, and I moved into my parents' house. And for 6 months, I cried myself to sleep. Poor, poor, poor me. Poor, poor, pitiful me. And I woke up one morning, I looked in the mirror, and ladies, you know what I'm talking about, those big puffy cry eyes, the ones you've been crying for 6 months, not the booze eyes, the cryy ones. Well, I looked like that, and I looked in the mirror, And I said, I am going to kick ass all over this town. Pour me a drink. And I moved out. I moved into a roommate situation and game on. I am drinking on Wednesday to prepare for Friday's happy hour. Saturdays, I'm drinking to oblivion. Sundays, I'm trying to taper off to get to work by Monday. Anybody ever notice that Jim in the big book shows up on Tuesday? You ever wonder what happened? I always think you overshot the mark, because I sure did. And I could never show up on Mondays, but I could barely get there by Tuesdays. And so, you know, my solution to this is I start dating the bosses. So I start dating the bosses, and they have no idea of my capacity for drink. And so I call in late, or I come in late, and I'd be like, I'm dating the boss. And then I'd call in sick, and he'd send flowers. And I got a good gig going on. Start traveling to San Francisco and New York and a lot of places. I was getting dripped with corporate credit cards and bling, like diamonds and sapphires and Movados. Yeah. I had arrived. You see, I level up. And I'm going to all these places. I'll tell you about the San Francisco deal. So we were going to go on a date, and we're going to go to the Bel Air Hotel. And I don't have a dress of that caliber. So he says, well, let's fly to San Francisco, and we'll get you a dress. We'll go to Embarcadero Center. So we fly up there. We go up, and I can't make a decision between two dresses. They were both Donna Karan dresses. She was the rage at the time. And I can't make a decision, so he buys both. And then I have some Donna Karan sunglasses, and we fly back home. Date night comes around, and you can dress up my insides. Or you can dress up my outsides. But my insides don't match. And I don't belong here in the Bel Air Hotel. And I am really nervous. And so I order a drink. And I gun it down. And then I order another drink. And I spill it. In the Bel Air Hotel, all over the white linen tablecloth and my cream-colored Donna Karan dress. And I am mortified. But I need to back this up. Ladies, how many of you have drank before the date? Thank you. How many of you have tried to control and enjoy your drinking on the date? Right. How many of you said, excuse me, I have to go to the restroom? Then you swing by the back bar and you throw a few shots back. Or you get to the bathroom and you pull the bottle out of your purse. Pull a few slugs. Then you go back to the table and you say, I'll have a salad. And then you got to leave the date and go drink like you need to drink. And that's exactly what happened that night. And I have to leave. I mean, I finished the date out and I got to leave and I got to go drink like I need to drink. So I leave from the Bel Air Hotel and end up the Pico Rivera Rim Ram Room. And the Pico Rivera Rim Ram Room is cork and mirror walls. It's got patent leather seats. It's got barf in the bathroom and urine on the floor. It is dark. And that is the way I like to drink. And they talk about seeking lower companions, and I was the lower companion. At a five-star hotel in Hawaii, I'm with him. And I'm sitting on the bed, and our book talks about we are without sufficient force to bring into the consciousness the suffering and the humiliation of even a week or a month ago. And I can't drink away this guilt, shame, and remorse I got going on. I cannot drink it away. You see, I'm sitting on the bed, and he's on the phone calling his wife one more time, giving her some lame excuse about where he's at. And I'd like to stand here and tell you I did that once. And I'd like to stand here and tell you I did that twice with two men. Or three times with three men. I've done it a lot. I have a lot of broken marriages behind me in the wake of my path. And when I work with a sponsor and do an inventory later on, I would learn I was a thief. That I'd robbed a wife of her husband, and I'd robbed the kids of their dad, and I'd robbed their wallet because he was paying my way for a lot of things. The guilt got to me. After that date, we ended it on a high note, and I called it off when we got back. And from this point forward, my life becomes very, very colorful. It's called black. I started I just shifted my sights on something else. And I was coming to at the top of Mount Baldy, not knowing how I got there or who I was with. And I would come to and I would look around, and the only thing I would do was search for the bottle, because I knew it would be the only thing that would dissolve the knot in my stomach called fear. And then I'd started knocking on hotel room doors in Pomona, and now I'm risking my life in the need of relief. Along this journey, a man named Jack showed up. Jack took me out. Ladies, how many of you moved in on the second date? How many of you have a toothbrush in your purse? Thank you. How many of you have a second pair of clothes in the trunk? I like your style. Let's talk after. So Jack takes me out. I ordered a salad. He told me later on, he said, I wished I'd counted the number of drinks you drank that night. He had no idea. So I move into with Jack. And Jack lives in Huntington Harbor. So I moved from Whittier to Huntington Harbor. And Huntington Harbor is a coastal city. And during this relationship, has anybody ever come to in the middle of a failed sobriety test? I was telling the police officers that I could not perform this function because my equilibrium was off due to an inner ear infection. And I went to jail that night. Has anybody ever come to in a city you didn't know existed? I came to in La Palma. La Palma is 1.82 square miles. I got pulled over for being an obstruction of traffic because I was going 8 miles an hour. So anyhow, during this time, I'm going to I get these DUIs and I go to Alcoholics Anonymous, my first exposure. I'm going to AA on a court card, and I get into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I come in here and I of course listen to the differences and not the similarities. I start listening to your stories, and you're sharing your stories of pain, and I'm like, man, I drink too, yeah. And you'd share your stories of joy. And I'd be like, yeah, that's a reason to drink. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I left. And I did not know you guys were sober. I thought you came in here and told us your escapades. I didn't listen. Now I know that when you come in here and you share your joy, it's multiplied amongst all of us. And you share your pain, and it's divided amongst us. I know that now. Just got my court cards on and went on my merry way. Eventually, Jack hung in there for about 2 years. He called me up from work one day and he said, I'm not going to watch you kill yourself or anyone else. I'm leaving. And he left. The only thing I asked was that I not be there when he left. And he moved out of the house I moved into. My alcoholism looks like this. The obsession is it's going to be different this time. This will be the right concoction. I will get that relief. The physical allergy is when I put it in me, I can't stop. I am drinking peppermint schnapps on the way to work because I know it smells like toothpaste. I have alcohol stashed underneath the passenger seat of my car. I've got alcohol stashed in my trunk. When I get to work, I have alcohol on the right-hand side drawer of my desk. At lunchtime, I call up the Japanese bar. I tell her two words, Black Russian. I get there, she's got two lined up, I gun those down. I run across the street to Circle K, I grab a vodka bottle and a Circle K cup, and that is my afternoon drink. And the main thoroughfare from Santa Ana, which is where I worked, to Huntington Harbor, is about 15 miles long, and it's called Warner. And I had liquor store tabs, bar tabs, and restaurant tabs from work to home. And at my house, I had alcohol stashed in my shoe boxes, I had it in my suit pockets, I had it underneath the kitchen sink, and I had it in my toilet tank because I now needed alcohol to survive. I know in the book in the line that it says, liquor ceased to be a luxury and became a necessity. And later on I would learn that alcohol was my master. Our book talks about we have but two alternatives. One is to blot out the consciousness of our intolerable situation the best I can or accept spiritual help. And I have no idea there's help. Didn't know I had a problem. Blot out the consciousness of my intolerable situation the best I can or accept spiritual help. Rent or booze? Rent or booze? Huntington Harbor is really expensive. I move. We go to Seal Beach. Seal Beach is an old town, a lot of money and a lot of booze and a lot of blackouts. I lived there for 2 years. I can tell you two things, Hennessy's and Main Street. That's it. Somehow I continued to manage and maintain a job. And on April 15th of 1994, I blacked out one more night. And my roommate and her boyfriend put me to bed. And I came to that next morning, and I was shaking violently. And I'd had the DTs before, but I'd never had them this bad. I could not stand fully erect, and I had to feel my way into the shower. And when I got into the shower, when that water hit my body, it felt like I'd been hit by pellets and pins. Has anybody ever felt like that? And when I went to wash my hair hurt, and I knew what would fix it, and it would be another drink. I went down, I bought another bottle of Bacardi, and the rest of the story has been fed back to me by those involved. My employers broke into my house, they broke into my room, and they tapped me on the shoulder, and they said, pack your bags, you're going somewhere. And I believe that God used them as a channel to get to me. And I believe that that was the hand of God that touched me that day, because for a moment I was instantly sober. And it was that moment of clarity, that moment of truth that hit my soul, and I had no fight. I had no fight, and I had no questions. I dutifully followed direction, packed my duffel bag with a bottle of Bacardi and my clothes. I got no idea what's happening. So they said, get in the car. Another little moment of surrender, and I got in the car with no question. Our book talks about pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. And they say there are no dues or fees here. I'm a female alcoholic, and I'll do anything I need to get what I want. And I just told you some of the highlights. I have not told you any of the lowlights. Pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Demoralizing. The acronym for that is PAID. Pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I had paid a huge price. Being escorted into a detox by my employers was the moment where my demoralization was in full effect. I was mortified. And they said, go through the door. And so I went through the door, and I got in the door, and they said, and they found my Bacardi bottle. I was really pissed. I had no idea what was happening. So they asked me, they said, the intake lady says, hey, do you need to call anybody? And I said, well, no, I'm good. And they said, well, listen, you're going to be here for a minute. Do you have any parents? I said, yeah. And they said, well, why don't you give them a call? They had moved out of state about 27 years ago. I called my mom and dad. I said, Mom, Dad, are you sitting down? They said, yeah. And I said, Mom, Dad, I'm going to detox for alcohol. And they said, oh, my God, Dawn, where are you? I'm like, I don't know. And she said, we'll find out. So I turned out and I said, where am I? And they said, you're at New Beginnings. I said, Mom, Dad, they tell me I'm at New Beginnings. And my mom said, well, where are you physically? We'll fly down. We'll assess the situation, see how we can help you and see what we can do for you. And I said, Mom, you just stay where you are. And they're like, by God, Dawn, you are a daughter. And I said, okay. So I said, where am I? They said, you're at New Beginnings at Clark and Candlewood in Lakewood. I said, Mom, Dad, they told me I'm at New Beginnings at Clark and Candlewood in Lakewood. And my mom paused on the other side of that phone. And she said, at Clark and Candlewood in Lakewood? And I said, that's what they said. And she said, Dawn, in 1964, you were born there. It was Lakewood General Hospital at the time. Mm-hmm. And I hope that the chills never go down my legs, because that is another moment where God was getting my attention. I thought to myself, if this, I can get a new beginning on life. I was biologically born here. If I just stayed, I can get this new lease. So I stayed. And 2 weeks later, the insurance kicked me out. And I will always be forever grateful to Bill and Bob, who talked about attraction, not promotion. And there was a woman, her name was Eileen. And Eileen ran this aftercare program that I was not required to attend, not by my employers, not by my insurance company, no one. She had what I wanted. You see, she had a genuine, authentic smile. She had an inner peace that radiated out. She was happy. You didn't even have to ask her. You could see it. You could feel it, because she vibrated. And I wanted what she had. So I sat next to her week after week after week, thinking I'd get it by transference. And I had no idea there was work involved. Ladies and gentlemen, I did that for 1 year. And I did nothing in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And on my 1 year sober anniversary, I am restless, irritable, and discontent. Unless I can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few steps. I'm on the phone that night, and I said, if this is what sobriety is all about, I don't want any part of it. I'm a miserable bitch. This sucks. It is horrible. Our Kyle talked about that. It's horrible. And on the phone that night, it was suggested to me, why don't you get a sponsor? Why don't you go to some women's meetings? Why don't you work the steps? And why don't you get involved in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous and your life will change? And on that phone, on that night, my willingness was born. And I was all in, admit one. I'm in. I wanted something to change. So I got a sponsor and I started working the steps. And I will be forever grateful for those that record the speakers before us. Because they really can save lives, and you're on a road trip or, you know, flying somewhere. We can, you know, tap into the power that, you know, is communicated to us. And so I glommed onto the cassettes. They were not CD or 8-tracks. They were cassettes. So I had cassettes, and I would put them in, and I would listen to these cassettes. And there was two speakers that broke down the steps in a manner in which I heard. And they launched me into a course of action, not only with my sponsor, but they really propelled it. They said, one speaker said, one is me, two is God, three is me and God, four and five is me, six and seven is God, eight and nine is you, 10 is me, 11 is God, and 12 is you, and there is no one else to play with. And the other speaker said this, one is, I am the problem. Two is come to believe there is a solution. Three is a decision to seek that solution. Four through nine take care of the past. 10 takes care of our daily life. 11 takes care of our spiritual life. And 12 takes care of our AA way of life. AA is the way I live. It is not something I do or attend. I can come up here and talk a good game, but how you living out there? How you living? How you treating people? Are you living a spiritually principled life? How you living? So I got into action. And when I came up, you know, to this come to believe in a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, I will be forever grateful for that We Agnostics chapter, because all woven through there, it says, lay aside a prejudice, express even a willingness. Cast aside an old idea, welcome in something new. I came out of a religion at 13 years old I did not understand, nor did I believe in. And I had a great big God. But as I told you, I didn't believe that I was worthy of any of God's love. I was doing stuff out there that was in some respects despicable. So I came in here and I watched you and I looked at you and I started to watch your eyes start to twinkle and your skin start to glow and I started to watch your character change. And do I have any hope that whatever is working for you could have possibly worked for me? And in our book, it says I can have a limited conception. A limited conception. So I can't see, feel, or touch your God. Limited conception. I picked the wind. You can see, I can't see, feel, or touch the wind. I can only see the effects of the wind rippling through the leaves of a tree. And I can feel the effects of the wind on my face. And the wind is so powerful, it can change a landscape. And if the very thing that I can't see, feel, or touch in you is changing you, then I'll take my wind until I can establish my own relationship. Our third step talks about relieve me of the bondage of self. Well, I can tell you the very paragraph on the very page that changed my life and changed my mind in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that is on page 55. It says, deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. Later on it says, in the last analysis, it is there that he may be found. Money, booze, men, all that human power. I end up in Alcoholics Anonymous. No human power could relieve us of our alcoholism. Relieve me of the bondage of self. It never says, relieve me of the bondage of alcohol. I get sober. I'm going to tell you what this looks like at 16 years sober. I get a job at 2 months sober as a temp for a file clerk for a temp service. And I get this corporate job. They put me in this corporate, you know, corporation. And then they saw my work ethic and they saw, you know, hard work. And I worked, and I had some great work ethics, you know, still by my parents. And they hired me on. And then I started to climb that corporate ladder like I said and knew I would. And then I start treating my employees with rudeness and curtness and disdain. I was condescending. And they don't like that so much. And so they took me to HR and they wrote me up. I was dumbfounded. Actually, I was appalled. And I had no, you know, I was like, what? So anyway, I signed the write-up, and fear is that evil corroding thread. And it starts to spill out into the sponsees. It starts to spill out into my family. It starts to spill out with my friends. And I'm taking them hostage. You know what they did this time? Blah, 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 blah. And eventually it circles right back into work. And I start treating my employees with rudeness and curtness and disdain. And I was condescending. Guess what? At 16 years sober, I am terminated in sobriety. I am fired. And I'm on the floor in a fetal position with bubbles coming out of my mouth because I don't know what happened. And I've been sponsoring people, going to meetings, doing everything in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I am fired? What? I am the problem. I'd been plugging into the wrong power, human power. You see, I had a pocketbook and a title, you know, and prestige. I got leveled and right-sized. Leveled to grow, leveled to grow, leveled to grow. So I took, I did a men's spiritual retreat with a man who holds this spiritual retreat with his wife's permission in his house. And he took me into a line in this big book. By the way, it was printed in 1939 and nothing's changed. Miss this line. It says, the wording was, of course, quite optional so long as we express the idea of voicing without reservation. He said, write your own third-step prayer. I was in the middle of an Albertsons parking lot, and I was cracked wide open for a brand-new experience when I wrote that prayer. Life has never been the same. I talk about 10, 11, and 12. Why? Because I wasn't doing it. 10 is, you know, there are specific instructions. It says, continue, 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 four times one paragraph. It's a, you know, it really what it is a demonstration to God that I'm still willing to do this thing. Examine my life. See how I'm doing. Give me a gauge. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And what happens is my external behavior is a result of my internal condition. And So sometimes I can't get to, you know, selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. So I ask myself these five questions. Do I have a need to control the person or the situation? Do I have a need to be right? Do I have a need to be heard? Do I have a need to be liked? Do I have a need to know? Usually if I can answer yes to any one of those five, I can drill down into the resentment. I can look for the fear. Because sometimes I can't get there. I can't find it. It says when these crop up, not if, they're going to. Because it talks about that spiritual condition. It talks about it on page 85 twice. It says, this is how we react so long as we are in fit spiritual condition. And five lines later, it says, we have a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. And I'm like, what's the condition? And it means unblocked. I keep that channel open for grace to flow. And the only way to do that is to do this work of step 10. Keep that channel open for grace to flow. Unblocked. I can get corked up. It happens. I was corked up on Tuesday. It was a situation that I can't really go into details, but I had shed some tears and I was praying. I called my sponsor. I'm like, hey, you know, I don't want to do this, but everything in me knows I have to. Because what we have here is principles and it's in integrity. And driving down the freeway, I had a death grip on my steering wheel, and I showed up. And the result of that was a brand new appreciation and a love of family. My sponsor my deceased sponsor, she was 81 years old and had 36 years of sobriety. She died in 2012. Of course, I have a sponsor today. But she loved Step 11, and she always drilled that into me, Step 11, prayer, meditation. And she'd say, you know, we talk about, you know, the effect. We drink for the effect produced by alcohol. We meditate for the effect. Today. But she always said, she said, Dawn, she says, you know, step 11 is just fulfilling that commitment of the decision you made in step 3. If you seek God in the morning, you don't have to seek him the rest of the day. But if you don't seek God in the morning, it's your first act of self-will. She says, I pray and meditate for 4 hours. And I said, you're 81 and you can. I loved her. I miss her every day. You know, meditation is the medication for our malady. We can pray. We have to meditate. Meditation is the medication for our malady. I think you might go home with that. Meditation is the medication for my malady. What'd that lady say? Meditation is the medication for your malady. You know, I always am, I like, you know, I love the words of Alcoholics Anonymous. I looked up the word improve. It says sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. Improve. Have you ever looked it up? It means make better, enhance that which was already there. What I came here looking for, I came looking with. All I'm really asked to do is shine it up. So our 12 steps says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. It does not say as the result of my attendance. Because I did that too. You see, I'm here because someone else was doing God's work. They delivered me. And my job is to go out there, and if I'm doing my 12-step work, it can become someone else's first step. I just got to welcome them to the meeting. Look for the face that's terrified. Do you know where the bathroom is? Would you like a cup of coffee? Do you need a hug? You see, our book says we have recovered and been given the power to help others. My job is to grab someone's hand and pull them out of the dark and put them on a path and be a light to guide the feet that are afraid. Put their hand in the hand of God and leave it there and let them do that for someone else. Because we're all really here just to walk each other home. To walk each other home. When I felt really settled and grounded in Alcoholics Anonymous, it was about 5 years sober, and I realized this. I never had any kids. I got sober when I was 29 and a half years old. My 30s were great. So were my 40s. I'm in my mid-50s. And I've been able to travel the world, but it's just never been through business. It just took a different form. We've been to Ireland and France and Fiji and Honduras and China and South Africa. We've been to all over, you know, meetings. We've been all over the world through different means and avenues, always paying our way, but just these opportunities have presented themselves, and we've been able to go to meetings all over the world. Always was Bill's, was Bill's vision to have a meeting at every salesman's destination. And I can tell you that sometimes we'll go to meetings, non-English speaking meetings. It doesn't matter because it's always the language of the heart. When we were in China, and we had an opportunity to go to the Great Wall of China, and I was with my husband, and we were in the Great Wall of China, and the bus driver said, hey, if you get off the bus and you go to the left, you can see it's very, very congested. It's a very easy climb. You can't get very far on the wall because it's so congested, or you can get off the wall, you can get off the bus and go on the right, and you can get on this part of the wall, and it's a very difficult climb. Nobody's on it. Take your pick. We'll see you at 3. So what do? Difficult climb. So we start climbing up the Great Wall of China. And I got to stop because it's an optical illusion. The incline is really steep. And I take a breath and I'm like, oh, boy, this was unexpected. And so we start climbing up again. And I said, Steve, can you push me? Can you pull me? And he's like, I'll do what I can. I'll help you out, you know. And he pushes me up a little bit further. And I'm like, oh, my God. And so finally we climb a little bit more, and I said, I just got to stop. Let's just stop. So I said, Okay, let me get my strength and let me catch my breath and okay, hold on. All right, let's keep going. So we kept on going and we got to this plateau. And if anybody has ever seen a postcard view of the Great Wall of China, and you usually see it wrapped around for miles with nobody on it, that is the vision that I received. I looked out over that and I was absolutely amazed, and I dropped to my knees on the Great Wall of China. And I said, "Dear God, I never imagined in my whole life would I ever be on the Great Wall of China. Thank you for this opportunity." And this is what came back to me. This is your life in Alcoholics Anonymous. Sometimes the steps take your breath away. And sometimes you got to ask for help. Like, can you help me with this fourth step? What kind of amends do you suggest? What kind of prayer or meditation do you suggest for the 11th step? Sometimes you just got to ask for help. And sometimes we just got to stop, regroup, and get the courage and the strength to move on. And I realized on the Great Wall of China that I had finally achieved a level of Eileen's peace, that lady in the aftercare program. I hope and pray, because every time that I have applied the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, they have always provided me a quiet mind, a skip in my step, joy in my heart, and peace in my soul. And I hope and pray they do for you too. And then grab someone's hand and get them out of the dark and put them on a path and be a light. And may we awaken and live. Thanks for letting me share.